It's Thursday, the 4th of February, 2016. Happy birthday to Lavoy Allen. Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Odour 11. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. And if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast for one episode, all you need to do is leave an iTunes review like Odour 11, who is one of the great listeners from Iceland. So thank you, Odour, for listening to the show and for and hey, love having people listening in Iceland. I wonder if you're the same person who was listening in Iceland the other day. Anyway, great to have you on board. Also, a big shout out to the guys at moneyball.com.au, Australia's best daily fantasy sports site. If you are living in Australia or New Zealand, get involved with Moneyball and play some of the DFS contests that are there every single day of the season. All right, before we get into all the action, a couple of things we want to talk about. The iTunes review contest is over. We have reached 500 reviews. And still haven't heard from the 400 review winner, Ron120932. You got one more day, and then I'm giving out the prize to someone else. But the 500th review was a person by the name of Emma Sizzle. If you are Emma Sizzle, please contact me via email, and we will organize your NBA jersey. So Emma Sizzle is the winner of the 500th iTunes review. Got smashed again yesterday. Really, really going. It might be something I continue on, and just every 100 reviews, give out a jersey. So if you have a spare 5 minutes, go and leave reviews on iTunes, and it does help the show out significantly. So thank you to everyone who has done that. Also, reminder, I'm doing the daily contests on Facebook and Instagram. Today's one on Facebook was, how many rebounds is Aaron Gordon going to grab? The answer was 6, and the winner of that, we finally had a Facebook winner, was Rob Percher. I don't know, did I pronounce that right, Rob? Let me know. Rob is a great supporter of the show, and he guessed 6 rebounds correctly for Aaron Gordon. On Instagram, the contest was, what is the amount of combined steals, blocks, and assists for Nikola Jokic? 2 people won that, Andy Ryan and Jack Halpin. They both got the total of 6 for that one as well. So be on the lookout on the Instagram page, which is redrock_bball, and Facebook, which is facebook.com/redrockbasketball, for those daily contests. Okay.
Let's get to it.
Sure will. The monstrous line of the night. I had so many options. I'm sure you can probably tell by looking at the title of this podcast, so not much of a surprise. And also, if you're watching the video, by looking at my jersey, but Steph Curry was the monstrous line of the night. But it wasn't a complete blowout, which when you think it, when a guy has 51 points with 11 triples, you think, yeah, he's got it for sure. But there were so many other massive performances from players that I had to consider them. But when you score 51, when you hit 11 triples, and you do it on 19 of 28 shooting, which is just a massive, massive number, it has to go to Steph. He also had 7 rebounds, 2 assists, and 3 steals. That's nothing to be sneezed at as well. And we talk about how big and impactful that field goal percentage is. 11 threes is fantastic, but his biggest overall Z-score contribution was actually from his field goal percentage. That is a huge effort. Steph looked like he was going to break the NBA record for most triples, fell one short. But a huge night from Steph nonetheless. 51 points is incredible. He's shooting at the half. He was 13 of 14 for 38 points at halftime, I'm pretty sure, with 8 triples. Just a red hot first half. Just fantastic game from Steph. We know how good he is. You don't need me to go on and on and on about how good Steph Curry is, but he is. He's that good. I don't think that's a big, bold statement for me to say. The waiver wire line of the night is Etuan Moore of the Chicago Bulls. Moore has been starting the last 2 or 3 games as the starting small forward for the Chicago Bulls, but he exploded in this one. He played 38 minutes, had 24 points on 9 of 16 shooting, hit 4 triples, had 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals. That's great. Fantastic. But in the other starts he's had, he's done nothing. He really got the extra bump here because Jimmy Butler was out, so someone on the wing had to take charge, and we all knew it wasn't going to be Tony Snell. So Moore was that guy. He's going to go back to playing more of a Tony Snell role in the next game. So that doesn't mean that he's a great ad, but a 14-team league guy, if you're going to get 35 minutes, you definitely come into consideration for those deeper leagues, definitely 16-team leagues. He has DFS value at his really low salary, so he has to be considered there. But a really big game from Etuan Moore here. As I said, he's been starting for the last week, averaging 33 minutes a game, 12.5 points, and a lot of it is fueled by this. 1.3 triples, 2.5 assists, a steal, a block, 46% shooting. I don't imagine him to retain. That's currently inside the top 100. I don't imagine that retains. But 14-team leagues definitely want to be looking at Etuan Moore, at least until Mike Dunleavy comes back, and at least until Mike Dunleavy comes back and is in game shape, which looks like it's going to be happening in the next couple of weeks. So Moore has very short-term value for deeper leagues. I'm not rushing out and wasting assets to go and add him in standard leagues at this point. The young gun of the night, we have a repeat winner, back-to-back, Andy Wiggins, played 37 minutes, 31 points, really dominating the two LA teams here. He went 12 of 21 from the field, hit 3 triples, which is a great addition to his game, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 blocks. Wiggins really turning it on these last couple of games. Still though, even though the last couple of games, his last week has been subpar, outside the top 100. You know my thoughts on Wiggins. He does look a little bit better these last two, but the two previous to this were really terrible. So don't think that, maybe he's turned the corner. Maybe he's going to be this guy who's going to start doing everything. He very well might be, but I don't think that these two games are necessarily the indicator that that is going to be the case. Obviously, he has to be owned, and he does have scope to grow. I'm just not convinced that he's going to become a top 50 player by the end of this season, or even a top 50 second half of the year player, which is always a big distinction when I look at things. You can say a guy overall is a top 50 player or a top 100 player, but it's really important to look at splits as well, which I'm going to be doing quite a bit of work on, I think, over the off season to look at monthly splits and first half, second half, and all that sort of stuff. Really good. It's a good idea to get a look at that post All-Star break splits and see where guys turn up and see if there's big improvements happening. Wiggins is a guy I'll be watching. He could be a top 50 second half guy. I do have my doubts that that will be the case, though. The Dart of the Night is another second-year player, and a guy who I've been massively high on this season and still remain high. Just wasn't the greatest night for Rod Hood. 34 minutes for him, 8 points including a 3, 1 rebound, 1 assist and 1 block. But he went 3 of 12 from the field and 1 of 2 from the free throw line. Definitely not the greatest performance there. But hey, his numbers recently have been fantastic. He's a top 70 player over the last month. He's getting a lot of minutes, hitting a lot of threes, increased assists. Your percentages are stellar, especially the free throws. The field goal percentage isn't stellar, but it's also not harmful. Not worried about this performance from Hood whatsoever. Just was a night where his shot wasn't going in. And that happens to the best of us, but that's basically me every time that I play where my shot doesn't go in. And I wouldn't put myself in the class of being the best of us. Let's look at the perfect DFS lineup for Wednesday. There we go. Pretty obvious at the top. Russ Westbrook, 69.8, and Steph Curry, 61.4. Curry was extremely expensive. We knew no one was really expecting him to go out and put up numbers quite like that, but he's always a chance to do that. Westbrook, to me, is almost a lock. Even at his extreme salary, he's putting up just crazy numbers every single night. At shooting guard, Vic Oladipo, 5.4. Really took advantage of the fact that Andre Robertson was out for the Thunder. He had a massive night. And Etuan Moore, as we just touched on, 39. Really, he was a guy that I was intrigued with yesterday. I can't remember if I mentioned him on the show. I think I did. But with the absence of Jimmy Butler, he definitely got a bigger bump in his production. Another one that you couldn't possibly have seen coming was CJ Miles. He was a guy that you definitely could have thrown into tournaments and hoped that he was coming good. But he was basically a zero, playing like 10, 12 minutes a night. He got red hot, scored 30.9 fantasy points in this one. No chance you would have had him in a cash game lineup, or if you did, you haven't been paying attention to his recent form. And KD again, he's just rock solid. 56.5 for Durant. At the power forward spots, LaMarcus Aldridge, 50.7. He's on a really nice hot streak at the moment. And David West had his best game since replacing Tim Duncan in the starting lineup. The other games he's played decent minutes, but hasn't put up any production. 31.5 points here for West in that role, which makes him always a nice tournament option, but his consistency really hasn't been there so far. At center, Tyler Zeller put up his second big game in a row, 26 points for him, and he is back in the rotation and are continuing to muddy the waters in Boston. The total for that lineup would have been 421.2 points, and think how big that lineup is, and it didn't even include guys with huge nights like John Wall, who was fantastic for the Wizards as well. All right, let's before we get into these games, and look at them in a little bit of extra detail. I need to make sure I've got them up on the screen. I need to bring up those box scores for you guys. Before we do that, though, I'm going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. All right, guys, we are back from that short break. Now we are going to look at these games. In that extra bit of detail, there were 11 of them, so get stuck into them straight away. Bring that up on the screen for you guys watching along. There we go. All right, the first game of the night was a blowout. The Atlanta Hawks and the Philadelphia 76ers. This game was so... It was over very quickly. There's not really much to gain fantasy-wise from looking at this. We saw Tim Hardaway have 13, 7, and 4, which is great, but none of this stuff's actionable. The minutes were basically split right down the middle between starters and reserves. Eddie Tavares got 8 minutes. Shelvin Mack got 9 minutes. The game was spread. Jeff Teague, 23, 25 to Paul Millsap. Al Horford played 22 minutes only. Nothing actionable from anything in this from a fantasy point of view. Same thing on the Sixers side of things. They even spread their minutes out. Nerlens Noel played 22. He looked good though. 10, 7, and 5 with 2 steals and a block. Jahlil Okafor with 25 minutes. Ish Smith played 26. If you had players in this game, you'd be pissed in DFS and in seasonal leagues because of the way the minutes were distributed. We even saw Kendall Marshall get back on the court for 8 minutes. Again, nothing actionable with any of this when the game is over that quickly. And I've been talking about how the Sixers have been competitive. They weren't competitive here. They lost by 40 points. Just a massive smashing. And that's going to happen sometimes. And it clearly happened in this one. Nothing to really fret about or worry too much about in that game. The next one, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets were without Kemba Walker. And they beat the Cavs. That is a weird one to me. Kyrie is really looking good though. 37 minutes, 26 points and 5 assists, a 3 and a steal. That buy low opportunity for Kyrie is probably over with. Kevin Love, 12 and 12 with a nice Richie Beno. 2 threes, 2 steals and 2 blocks on some pretty low shooting, but still a nice night. And LeBron went 23, 6 and 6 and added 2 blocks as well. The rest of the Cavs, almost nothing with the exception of J.R. Smith. He hit 4 triples, he had 4 steals and a block. For 14 points, he's a guy that I like in 12-team leagues, but I don't really like anyone else. Iman Shumpert, only 22 minutes for 4 points. He couldn't get anything extra happening with Dellavedova out. Same for Mo Williams, who scored 5 in his 11 minutes. And Tristan Thompson, a really poor night. 4 points, 4 rebounds in 34 minutes. He is not a guy who should be owned in most 12-team formats. Yes, he can get rebounds. He didn't here, but really he's a one-category sort of guy. Maybe 2 if you include field goal percentage, but that's about all he does. For the Hornets, Jeremy Lin stepped in and took control with Kemba out. 24, 5, and 8 for Lin with 2 triples in 32 minutes. He's possibly going to have a reduced role when everyone gets healthy, but I still do like Lin for certain 12-team league builds. Nick Batum was back, 10, 5, and 5 in 31 minutes. Had a block, had a 3. That's a bit better from Batum. Still not a great shooting night, but a nice all-round production sort of game. And Cody Zeller also returned. He went straight back to the starting lineup, played 28 minutes, went 6 and 7 with 2 assists and a block. He was close to a top 50 guy for stretches before he got hurt. I'd be looking to add him if you are in desperate need of some big men stats. That obviously means Spencer Hawes went back to the bench 6-4 and 4 for Hawes in 20 minutes, and Frank Kaminsky had 15 and 6 in his 24 minutes. The return of Zeller also limited Marvin Williams' minutes down to 24. Now, Williams was still really good, 16 and 4 with 3 triples and a steal. Red-hot shooting percentages. He probably should be owned in most leagues, but I think that the return of Zeller and the return of Batum is going, and obviously the return of Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, is going to impact Marvin Williams' minutes, and he's going to be a 24 to 27 guy rather than a 27 to 30 guy moving forward. And he's not going to shoot 5 of 7 each night. Another thing when looking at his rank on Basketball Monster, if you're looking at 9 Cat, his rank is inflated by his insanely low turnovers for his big minutes. It's his biggest positive Z-score contribution, and it's turnovers. And to me, that really artificially, not artificial because it's a number and it's still there. We're not inventing the maths on it. But having low turnovers like that, when it's your biggest contribution, it does bump your value up in the eyes of the metrics. And it's not something that I do really, when looking at something like that and I see something, oh, they're right up there. If their biggest contribution is turnovers, it makes me knock them down, you know, quite a bit. Or you know, I'll go and I'll turn turnovers off on the punting section to see where they actually fall, because your turnovers are, I hate them in 9-cat roto leagues, despise them. In head-to-head leagues, I never pay attention to them, but I understand them there being there so you don't have a 4-4 week or something like that. But it does artificially inflate the rank. So if I'm in a 9-cat head-to-head league, which I'm in quite a few of, I basically set turnovers to punt in the Basketball Monster, you know, strategy section or the league settings section. I set it to punt just so I can get a more of a true reflection of players, because when someone's being influenced that much by their turnovers, it does put a bit of a, I don't know, false spin on the rest of their numbers. I don't know if I'm getting my thoughts across here correctly, but I think you can understand what I mean. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, there's clearly no minutes restriction for him. 37 minutes, 11 and 13, no other stats and some poor percentages. That's going to happen with him from time to time, but he should be owned probably in most 12-team leagues. 13 rebounds out of a small forward is fantastic. He is an above-average rebounder for his position. We just want him to start adding steals and blocks and getting that field goal percentage up. But a disappointing night, 13 rebounds is still fine. Should own him. The Detroit Pistons and the Boston Celtics. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope lasted 16 minutes before succumbing to a right groin strain. It looks like it's going to cause him to miss some time. He's almost definitely out for Thursday. Might miss a few more games. Groins can be a little bit tricky. So he is going to miss some playing time, I would say. Maybe two, maybe three, maybe a week worth of games, which could be three. He had 4 points and 2 rebounds. Until we hear the severity, I'm not making any like drop Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or anything like that. If you're looking to add someone, it's Stanley Johnson. He played 30 minutes in this one, 11 and 9 with 3 triples and 2 assists. He'll get some extra run. They can put him at the 2, and they think that he can play quite a bit of 2. He can handle the ball as well. Johnson, he's the guy that I'm adding. Brandon Jennings only played the 20 minutes here, 5, 2, and 3 with a block. Definitely not rushing out to grab Jennings in a 12-team league. In a 14-team league, he probably should have been owned already, but he is a priority behind Stanley Johnson. In fact, I'd include Ersan Ilyasova if he's on a waiver wire ahead of Jennings, because it's just going to open up minutes in the rotation as they can push guys down and put Ilyasova with more minutes. Same with Marcus Morris. They can get a few extra minutes out of those guys in that sort of 2-3-4 position. The other guy who got some extra run was Darren Hilliard, the rookie, the second-round draft pick out of Villanova, I think. 4 points for him in 12 minutes with an assist. That's a deep league, sort of 30-team league stuff we're talking about there. The other thing it'll do is it should give Reggie Jackson some extra point guard minutes with Jennings playing maybe a couple extra minutes at the 2. Jackson played 33 here, 17 and 7 with a block and 3 triples. So a nice line there. Andre Drummond, 4 of 6 from the free throw line. Fantastic. Kept him in the game for 33 minutes, 16 and 13 with 2 blocks. A big night there. And Ersan Ilyasova, 16 points with 2 triples in his 26 minutes. Marcus Morris had a nice counting stat night, 15, 7, and 4 with 2 triples, but 4 of 17 from the field is clearly subpar. He's not a must-own 12-team league guy. I've said this plenty of times, but he's not a complete abomination or anything along those lines. Onto the Celtics, Evan Turner continues to produce really good value, 14, 6, and 5, 2 blocks in 26 minutes. You could do a lot worse than owning him at the moment while he's playing this well. And while Jay Crowder continues to be somewhat limited. Now, Crowder still played 31 in this one. His other games had all been under 30, but 31 minutes is not bad. 12, 6, and 4 steals for Jay Crowder. But Turner's getting this 26 to 28 minute roll a night, and he's producing. You have to consider him. Tyler Zeller, he got 14 minutes a night, not as big as what he got in the game against the Knicks. 6 and 5, but added 4 assists, 1 steals. One steal and 3 blocks, which is obviously where his big DFS value came from all those periphery numbers. He's not someone that we need to really pay attention to in our standard leagues at the moment. Amir Johnson, 21 minutes, 4 and 4. Jared Sullinger, 18 minutes, 12, 3 and 5. Kelly Olynyk, 19 minutes, 6 and 7. So the front court squish continues with Zala and Jurepko getting more minutes. If there's someone out there you want, Olynyk, Johnson, Sullinger, it is tough to own in this sort of situation. Olynyk's got the most upside, definitely. But neither of them, or none of them, have a must-hold lock written next to their name. You can go and move other guys on, I think, in most of the cases, because of the way that Stevens is currently using these minutes and the way that he basically uses them all season. Isaiah Thomas had 17, 5, and 7 with 2 triples, a nice night from him. And Avery Bradley went 15, 4, and 3. While Marcus Smart, 28 minutes, not his best night, but still hit 4 triples for 12 points, added a steal, had 4 rebounds. He's a guy that I do like in standard format still. The Indiana Pacers and the Brooklyn Nets. Talked about CJ Miles before, absolutely red hot off the bench. He only played 22 minutes, but hit 10 of 15 shots for 27 points, including 4 triples. That's great, but he'd been atrocious before that, so I don't think that he's a guy that I need to rush out and scoop up or anything like that. Jordan Hill started in place of Jan Mahinmi. He played 19 minutes. Foul trouble was an issue there, and also Miles playing hot allowed him to go a little bit smaller. 6 and 4 for Hill. Really he's only a short-term guy until Mahinmi comes back anyway. And Miles Turner, struggling with his shot badly here. 4 of 11 from the field and 1 of 2 from the line. 9 and 7, still had 3 blocks. So still not a complete waste from Turner, but not his strongest performance. George Hill, really nice line. 13-4-2, two triples and three steals, while Paul George went 17-4-6 and added five steals, a block and two triples. So great all-round production from both those guys. The 6-18 from Paul George is not ideal. He's really struggling after a red-hot November. He's struggling in terms of what he's able to do shooting-wise. His numbers have dropped down considerably. He's now shooting 41% on the season. Over the last 2 months, he's shooting 39%. So it's a big, big drop-off. This is going to be his worst shooting season of his career if it continues along this line, not including last year's six-game, 37% sample size. He needs to obviously get things going again. I do think the injury is playing a part in this. He is a top 30 guy only over the last 2 months, not that top 10 guy we saw to start the season. And fatigue is definitely playing a part in this situation for Paul George. Monte Ellis, he was always going to cool off. He didn't actually with his shot because he went 5 of 7, but 11-6-5 with 3 and a steal. That's more realistic of what we can expect from Monte moving forward. And we had a nice Joseph Young night, 8-3-2 with two triples and a steal in those 17 minutes. Really nice dynasty target is Joe Young. On the Nets, big game from Joe Johnson, 20 points, 4 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals, 4 triples. Don't expect that every night. Don't expect that really ever. But his way he's been playing, in the form he's been in, he's probably worth a 12-team league own. Wayne Ellington got hot. Hit 6 of 12 shots, had 16 points and 2 triples. He's only a deeper league guy. And Thad Young got back in business, 16-14. Nothing else, so that limited his upside, but good to see him getting back and playing 35 minutes and putting up nice numbers. The point guard spot. If you know what's going to happen to the point guard spot, can you please send me an email? Because every game it changes. Shane Larkin was dominant in the last game. He plays 16 minutes here and has 3 points and 2 assists. And they give Donald Sloan 32 and goes 11-3-7. Larkin's still the better player. If Sloan's going to get more minutes, though, he's going to be the best option. I reckon most of the time you can leave them alone in 12-team leagues and guess which one's going to play and stream them in. Maybe. They're not must-hold. Not a chance. Brook Lopez, 21-8-3, and had a steal and a block, but a really poor free-throw night from Brook, going 9-14 from the line. So that volume really kills you along with that poor conversion rate. The Oklahoma City Thunder, they took on the Orlando Magic. Vic Oladipo, really loving the fact that there was no Andre Robertson guarding him. 37-7-4, 3 triples, 1 steal, 1 block, 13-19 from the field, 8-8 from the free throw line. You'd love that sort of performance. This is the sort of thing that I was hoping from him at the start of the season when I said he's going to be a top 20 player. Unfortunately, Skiles has jerked him around for most of the season, and that's impacted what he's been able to do. But getting back into it now and putting up some really nice numbers over the last month or so. Nick Vucevic, 16 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 blocks. Yeah, that's a decent night. Toby Harris, 15-7-3. And Toby Harris feels like he's just going to be this solid back-end roster guy. That's about all. He doesn't feel like he's going to get much better than that, which is okay, but he's just sort of stuck there. Aaron Gordon had not a good night. 1 of 10 from the field for 2 points in 26 minutes, 6 rebounds, and an assist. Still making sure I'm holding him. People will drop him, I guarantee you. So if someone does, go and have a look and go and add him if necessary. And Lord Alfred Payton played 29 minutes, and he was almost as bad shooting the ball. 3 of 11, 6 points, 5 rebounds, and 6 assists. So still helping in those areas, but not a good conversion night. Evan Fournier struggled. 19 minutes, 7 points with 2 assists. And Mario Hezonja played 20 minutes for 16 points with 4 threes and 4 assists. I had a question about this come in today, and do I drop Fournier and add Hezonja? I think Fournier is not a guy that you necessarily need to hold in 12-team leagues, but I don't necessarily think that Hezonja is the guy that has to replace him. Now, you can, and you hope that it works out, and Hezonja gets a 25 to 26-minute role moving forward. I don't think that's going to be the case on most nights. I think it's going to be probably a similar situation like this. Some nights Fournier will get 25 minutes, some nights Hezonja will get 25 minutes. Sometimes they'll both be under 20 minutes, and that's going to make them more 14 to 16-team league guys. But Hezonja definitely has been more of a favorite of Skiles recently, and it's showing in his playing time and his production. He's looking a lot better than what he did to start the season. On to the Thunder, Russell Westbrook, 24-19-14, 2 steals. That's a huge, huge line from Westbrook. He went 10 of 18 from the field, hit all 4 of his free throws. Really fantastic numbers. That's 3 straight triple-doubles for Russ as well. You can't get much better than what he's doing, except his teammate tried pretty hard to do better, and that's Kevin Durant, who hit the game winner. He had 37 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 6 3-pointers, 2 steals, 3 blocks. this is what I'm talking about when I had to decide the monstrous line of the night. There was three guys in this game alone, Oladipo, Durant, and Westbrook, who all could have challenged what Steph Curry did. Big, big nights from all of these guys. Serge Ibaka, not so great offensively, just 9 points on 4 of 11 shooting, but 7 boards, and you love the 6 blocks that he gave you. He's a mid-round player, and it feels like he's going to stick there for most of the year. Dion Waiters, big minutes, does nothing with him, and it looks like it's going to be a continuing trend. 8-2-2 in his 34 minutes, while Steve Adams went 7-9 in 36, limiting Enes Kanter to 16 minutes. But perhaps unsurprisingly, Enes Kanter was still productive, 13-7 with a 3 in his 16 minutes, blocked a shot as well, but really, really tough to own him in your standard league formats. The Golden State Warriors and the Washington Wizards, we've already talked, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, lost in all this, had a triple-double, 12-10-12, a steal, 5 blocks as well, big nights from Draymond. And Klay Thompson had 24 points with 6 triples, 4 rebounds, 1 steal. Their big three putting up huge numbers. Harry Barnes, just he can't get it going. 12-3 with a 3-pointer and a steal. I don't think that he's a must-own guy in a 12-team. I would rather have a guy like Gorgui Dieng, Aaron Gordon, Rod Hood, who's still available in some leagues. Definitely rather have those guys than Harrison Barnes at the moment. Weird line from Andrew Bogut. 2 points in 19 minutes, but 6 boards and 6 assists. Yes, I know he's a good passer, but that's a really weird line. And then missed all 4 of his free throws. He's a on-and-off 12-team league sort of guy, probably more off than on at the moment, especially when you can't crack 20 minutes, even when Festus Ezeli is out of the game. Another guy who challenged for the monstrous line of the night, Johnny Wall. 35 minutes for Wall, 41 and 10 assists, 3 triples, 3 rebounds, 2 steals on a ridiculous 17 of 25 shooting. Just some massive, massive bumps in field goal percentage went on today. Yes, when Curry goes 19 of 28 and Wall goes 17 of 25, they're huge, huge numbers. I'm pretty happy that I've got a share of both of those guys in some of my leagues because my field goal percentage will be looking pretty spiffy after that. Brad Beal played 29 minutes, 18 points, 2 assists, 2 steals, a block, a 3, and a rebound. Someone mentioned to me today on Twitter that Dirk was available on their waiver wire, which is dumb in itself, and he said, should I consider dropping Bradley Beal? Now, we know Beal's going to have issues with the minutes limit, but if he's playing 29 minutes, that's not really too much of a minutes limit that's going to cause a massive amount of concern. So I told him I wouldn't be dropping Beal. Beal, it is going to be a worry, but that's a really nice full line from him. Otto Porter back to full minutes, 32 minutes, 9-3-2 with 4 steals. That's great for his owners. And Marcin Gortat at least played more than 25 in this one. 9-8 with 2 steals and a block. Jarrett Dudley started, barely played, 18 minutes. Nene played 19 for 12-7. It just looks like it's going to be a mess for most of the season and not a lot actionable. The Warriors did go small, as they always do, so that limited what Nene could do, and it allowed the Wizards to play Ramon Sessions a lot more. He played 22 minutes and went 12-4 with a steal and a 3-pointer. That was Gary Neal getting some run there as well. The New Orleans Pelicans and the San Antonio Spurs. Anthony Davis, another guy. This sort of line from Anthony Davis, this is almost a 5x5 line for Anthony Davis, and it goes unnoticed with everything else happening. 28-10 for Davis, 4 assists, 4 steals, 4 blocks, 11 of 22, and 6 of 7 from the line. This is how ridiculously good this guy can be. We just need him to stay healthy. That is a fantastic performance from Davis. Really, just historically good. You don't see many lines like that, and yet he's probably the 5th, 6th best player on the night. Just a ridiculous NBA night. Jrue Holiday, 30 minutes for him. 20 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals. Great line there. And Norris Cole, really surprising me, getting a lot of assists lately. 9 in this one in his 34 minutes. 14, 4, and 9. With a steal, he has to be owned as bad as it feels, especially with Tyreek out. His value will decline when Tyreek comes back. But the 7.5 assists he's averaging over these last 4 games, it's like gold. Now, he's not a great player in lots of other areas, and even averaging that, he's still barely just at number 80 in the weekly value. But you still have to own him, especially when he's getting these minutes, and he is producing some pretty nice numbers at the moment. Bryce DeJean-Jones started in place of Tyreek Evans, played 23 minutes, 8-3 with a couple of triples, while Tony Douglas played 22 and went 3-2-1. DeJean-Jones is preferable to me than Douglas in your deeper format, because obviously they've been preferring him over Evans. If Evans returns, then he looks like he could be locked in at 28, 29 minutes a night. That seems likely. Evans will probably return for a bit, but I don't imagine we're going to see Tyreek playing out the season. Ryan Anderson, 10-10 in his 31 minutes. Nice but empty. And Omer Asik grabbed another 11 boards and didn't do much else in his playing time. While Alonzo G right down to 18 minutes here as they went smaller and they gave the extra minutes to Douglas and DeJon Jones. And he played 18 minutes and had one steal. So yeah, there's nothing much to love there. The Spurs, they played big minutes to their guys here, which is definitely un-Spursy. 34 minutes to Aldridge, 36-6 with 3 blocks. Kawhi had 26-5 with 2 blocks, a steal and a triple. And Danny Green got into it. He played 39 minutes, 16-7, 4 triples, a steal and a block. That's fantastic. Do you trust Danny Green? I don't really trust him, but the allure of what Danny Green can do means if I've got Bobby Portis, I'm definitely dropping him to go and add Danny Green. But am I dropping real value to get him? Am I dropping Aaron Gordon to get Danny Green? I'm probably not. It really depends on the way my team is looking at and where I'm positioned. But could this be a catalyst? I know I've said it about 4 or 5 times this year already. Is this a catalyst for a good Danny Green season? Yeah, I'm not convinced. 27 minutes for David West, 14-5-5 with 2 blocks in place of Tim Duncan. He'll have a few more of these games. He'll also have a few more stinkers, so he's not a guy that you have to go and run and add. And Tony Parker played 30 minutes, had 2 points, but 8 assists is quite handy from him. Not much else to really talk about on this team. The Miami Heat and the Dallas Mavericks, Hassan Whiteside was back. He played off the bench, hit all 5 of his shots for 10 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 blocks and a steal. His owners will be rapt at his back. Expect him more to get back to that 28-minute mark in the next game. Amari Stoudemire played 17. He'll be probably a 10-minute sort of player, I would say. 6-5 for Stoudemire with 4 blocks, so just a stack of block shots from the Heat. Luol Deng's good form continued, 15-5 with a block and a 3. You could do worse than adding him as a short-term guy in 12-team leagues to see how it fares, but I'm not really holding my breath. Goran Dragic, 7 assists and 7 points in 33 minutes. Yeah, not a good shooting night, nor was it a good one from Dwayne Wade, who went 6 of 19. He also had 18-8-4, so a solid night there from Wade. Justice Winslow got another 30 minutes, 6 rebounds, a steal and a block. Just really, just not quite there for 12-team leagues. Not there yet. And Chris Bosh had 20 points with 4 rebounds. Not his greatest performance, but the 20 points is obviously handy. Just a lot of zeros in other areas. Dirk Nowitzki, 28-4 with 2 triples and 3 blocks. A rarity for Dirk getting those 3 blocks, so you must be pretty excited about that. And Zaza Pachulia played 39 minutes, 10-15, 4 assists for Zaza. The Mavericks had a really tight rotation. It's because they were down a couple of players. Darren Williams didn't play with his hip issue, and Devin Harris was out again with one of his myriad of issues. This time it's a toe problem. Wes Matthews cannot get it going. 37 minutes, 9-3-2 with 2 steals. He is close to being droppable, and he's been dropped in quite a few leagues. Don't think that he has to be held onto in all sort of spots. I really like Barea if Williams has to miss any more time, but it doesn't appear that Williams will miss much more time. 11-3-4 for Barea in his 35 minutes. He had 3 triples as well, so a good night, but not a guy that I'm rushing to add because you may get one more game out of him. You might get nothing more out of him. Ray Felton, 11-2-4 in 30 minutes, while Chandler Parsons had 12-7-3 in his 32. We also saw a bit from Justin Anderson, 5-7 in 22 minutes, adding a couple of blocks, but that's a Dynasty Deep League special. The Denver Nuggets and the Utah Jazz, Will Barton, another double-double. He's had a few this season, surprisingly. Only 23 minutes, though, and that's the concern with him. 10-10, 2 steals and a block. He's still happy with that production. Gary Harris played 42, 11-6 with 3 steals and a 3. I've said it many times, Gary Harris is a guy that I think should be a top 100 second-half guy. He's a nice steals and 3s sort of player, and they obviously trust him to get pretty big minutes because, again, 42 as opposed to Will Barton's 23. Danilo Gallinari had 24 points and not much else. Oh, he had something else. He had some bad shooting, 5 of 16, but 12 of 14 from the line helps you in that area. Nikola Jokic, not his best performance, but still 8-6-4 with 2 steals and a 3. It is not a bad night. And Emmanuel Mudiay continuing just to brutalize efficiency numbers everywhere. 3 of 10 from the field, 3 of 6 from the free throw line, 9 points with 6 assists and a steal. He is a points league guy, and that's probably about it. That's not true. He could be a deeper league guy, but even in a deeper league, if you're, say, in a 16-team league and you've got Mudiay, he's still doing that much damage to those categories. You really do need to be built to take on those big negatives that he provides. Ken Fareed, 14-5 in his 27 minutes. That feels like just par for the course for him. On to the Jazz. Derek Favors, the injury worries are hopefully behind us. 16 and 11 in 35 minutes, 6 blocks, big night from Favors, while Rudy Gobert had 12 and 5 with only a steal and a block. Not his greatest performance, clearly. Gordy Hayward, 16, 2 and 5. Yeah, whatever. And Hal Neto is clearly winning this battle between him and Trey Burke. 27 minutes for Neto, 10, 4 and 4 with 2 triples. Now, it doesn't mean we need to own him or do much with him outside of, say, a 16 to 18 team league, but the minutes have been way up for him. And the production comes occasionally. So he's not something to completely just dismiss offhand. Trevor Booker with a decent night, 2 blocks in his 21 minutes, but not a lot to really focus on with much of the Jazz guys there. The next game, the Chicago Bulls and the Sacramento Kings. Derrick Rose had a really good night, 21, 6 and 9 with 2 steals on 6 of 15 shooting. You can see the difference having the absence of Jimmy Butler. Now, Rose is able to get more ball handling and more distribution, but he'll likely go back to that secondary guy when Butler returns. Pau Gasol, 16 and 13. He had 4 assists and 2 steals as well, so big numbers from those guys. And I mentioned Tony Snell earlier. He started in place of Butler. He had 9 and 7 in 21 minutes, but there's nothing really actionable there for him. While Dougie McDermott had 11 points in his 25 bench minutes. Bobby Portis, 21 minutes, 8 and 3. He's going to need another 2 injuries, it feels like, to be relevant. He can be dropped in all 12 team leagues, redraft sort of formats anyway. Or even 14 team leagues. He's really pushing the friendship there at the moment. Just not getting anything done. Not a great player at this point in his career. Probably a little bit overrated by some in the fantasy community. He was worth a pickup, definitely, because he did have some nice games in limited minutes earlier on, but it's clearly not panning out that way. Taj Gibson, solid, 12 and 8 with a steal. He's not going to be spectacular, but you know you're going to get pretty solid production out of Taj. Boogie Cousins, 30 and 11, 4 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks, fantastic. 6 of 11 from the free throw line was not fantastic, but good to have him back and firing. And Marco Bellinelli replaced Ben McLemore in the starting lineup, played 36 minutes, 18 and 4 with 3 assists and 3 steals. What do you do with Bellinelli? I don't think No, that's not true. I think in a 12-team league, if you're desperate for some scoring and three-pointers, he's someone that's you can have a look at, especially if they're going to run with him big minutes. I'm not banking on it being significant value, but he's worth a look. We'll leave it at that. Rajon Rondo, 31 minutes, 6 points with 9 assists and 3 steals. Yeah, whatever. Rudy Gay, 12 and 6. He took a bit of a production hit with DeMarcus Cousins back. And Willie Cauley-Stein started and only 18 minutes. After being a guy who was getting 30 minutes for 5 or 6 games in a row, he's really dropped off recently. He was a must-own player over that stretch. Probably not so much anymore. The Kings still trying to work out what they're trying to do. Go small, change their rotations up. Cauley-Stein, look, just getting limited at the moment. And that means that, yeah, yes, he does have upside, but not necessarily a guy that I have to hold on to. 19, 2 and 2 for Darren Collison in 30 minutes, and Omri Caspi had 10 and 6 with some nice peripheral numbers, but Caspi's not a 12-team league must-own, but I still think that that Collison is. The last game of the night, the Minnesota Timberwolves with a big victory over the Los Angeles Clippers. Ricky Rubio, just the 8 points on 1 of 6 shooting, but 5 rebounds, 7 assists and 5 steals is a very nice night from Rubio, and Karl Anthony Towns had 17 and 12 with a 3 and a block, so big games from those guys. Zach LaVine played 34 off the bench, which is great to see. 17 and 4, 2 triples, 3 assists, and 1 steal. Owning him in 12 team leagues. And Gorgui Dieng, 12 and 10 in his 31 minutes. Kevin Garnett, Nikola Pekovic, Kevin Martin, all out of this one. Nemanja Bjelica was also a DNP CD. And of course, we saw Tayshaun Prince get 31 minutes and have 8 points and 6 rebounds. But all those guys, Dieng, LaVine, you got to make sure they're owned. Towns, Rubio, and Wiggins. It's the best 5 players on this team, and it's pretty straightforward. And they played the most minutes with the exception of Prince slotting in there. And shockingly enough, they won. The Clippers, Chris Paul, 22, 4 and 8, 2 triples and 4 steals. Had some issues with their referee at the end with a tech. I'm not going to get too much into that, but obviously wasn't a great situation for Chris Paul and the Clippers with that almost basically costing them the game. DeAndre Jordan, 18 and 15, 2 steals and 3 blocks. A nice performance from him. He's really benefiting from Blake Griffin being out, able to do a little bit more with his offensive numbers, just a slight uptick, more rebounds, just getting that little bit extra done. Jamal Crawford played 28 minutes and had 21 points, while Wes Johnson almost had the rare triple three, 3 threes, 3 steals, 2 blocks. He is a massive threat at that. He is a 12-team consideration guy. He's a must-own 14-team league guy, but he's their best option. They should be playing him 27 minutes a night. He can do a lot defensively. He can play small ball four. I really do like Wes Johnson as that role player. Much better than the other crap that they throw out there, like Prigioni, like Marmute, like Rivers, who got ejected in this one and lasted just 7 minutes. He's a guy that does have 12-team league value, Wes Johnson. I do think that he can be could be a guy to have a look at. Just had a suggestion come in for the triple three line. Could be a three cubed. Not I don't know if many people are going to get one of those lines, but hey, it's definitely worth considering as a name. JJ Redick, 1 of 9, not his best night. 5 points with a triple in his 33 minutes. All right, time for a quick break, and then we're going to be back to preview the 4 games for Thursday and answer some listener questions. I saw you. Shadows creeping onto the screen here. I don't know what's going on. Sun setting as I'm recording, leaving some very weird shadow effects. But you can still see my face. I'm sure that's the most important thing that you're all tuning in for. The DFS portion of the show, there are 4 games on Thursday. Let's get into those now. The first one is the New York Knicks and the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons are favored by 5.5 points, and the total is 204 in this one. Injury-wise, Jose Calderon still questionable with his groin issue, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope basically has no chance to play, so I think we can rule him out. I love Stan Johnson. He is at 4,000. He put 22 up today. I think that 30 minutes feels like it's going to be a lock for him. He's going to get that extra run at shooting guard. I really like Stan Johnson in this one, and there's a couple of other Pistons guys that are really good value too. Reggie Jackson at 7,000. He has sort of underperformed recently, but this is a great spot for him. I think he gets some extra run at point guard with Caldwell Pope out, because that means that Jennings will play some more at the two, and even Jennings becomes a nice punt option at 3,700. He can easily put up 25 points in the right spot, and he might get 2-3 extra minutes and put up that extra run here. So now Jennings, Jackson, and Johnson, Triple J, they can all put up, will have decent value. Johnson's probably the one I'm most excited about, but all those guys are worth looking at. I like Andre Drummond at 8,700. There's always the risk with a hack strategy, but he's been sort of free of that the last 3 games, and it's not going to happen if he hits 4 of 6 free throws like he did today. So Drummond is in consideration, as is Marcus Morris. He's at 5,100. He might see a bit of extra run. It's a decent matchup for him. He feels like a really nice cash game play. His 5-game min max is 20 and 27. So really right in that range. Now, 20 is not a great score, but it's also not a complete write-off if you're at 5,000. It's 4x to 5.2x. That's his range, which is pretty solid. Aaron Aflalo, on the other hand, is very up and down. He's at 4,900. With KCP out, the defense-wise on the wings is obviously reduced from the Pistons, so Aflalo may have a little bit of extra space to work in, so it makes him a decent tournament option. What about
percentages?
He's at 6,500. He's really not been producing lately. His ownership percentage is going to be down. This matchup is not favorable for him. I'd still be okay throwing him into a tournament because we know that he can go big, but definitely not want to look at him in a cash game. Ersan Ilyasova at 5,500. I'll probably pass. Robin Lopez at 5,200, though, I think makes a lot of sense. This is a positive matchup recently for centers going up against the Pistons. He dropped almost 40 against the Celtics. Let's hope that he sees some pretty big minutes. And I think he'll have to if he's going up against Drummond or even if Baines is in. At least they've got a big man and they need to put someone big and strong like Lopez on those guys. I think that at 5,200, you're looking for him to get 26, 27 points. I think that he can do that and feel pretty comfortable about him doing that. Melo is at 8,900. This is not a great spot for him to spend almost 9,000 on Carmelo Anthony. I'm not all that intrigued about it. The Pistons have been reducing small forwards pretty well. Marcus Morris has been playing some pretty nice defense. And I'm not sure I really want to spend that 9,000 on Carmelo Anthony. If Jose Calderon's out again, Langston Galloway's at 4,500. He comes into play. If Calderon plays, then Galloway and Calderon don't really factor into the equation. 3,800 for Aaron Baines is still relatively appealing, despite the fact that Drummond is playing more. Baines is still producing. He's averaging almost 18 points across his last five games, and at 3,800, he's almost right on 5x value. So not the worst guy to throw in, and you know, something funky could happen into one of your GPPs if you're throwing out multiple GPP lineups. The New York Knicks and the Los Angeles Lakers, that's not true. The Los Angeles Lakers and the New Orleans Pelicans is the next game. The Pelicans are favored by 10.5, and the total is 209 in this one. Tyreek is questionable. I would be thinking that Tyreek is not going to play. Kobe Bryant is also questionable with his shoulder that's kept him out for, or didn't keep him out. It's limiting him and basically putting him on the injury report every day. While Tariq Black had some issues with his foot, but he is considered probable, so that's good news for Tariq Black fans. Norris Cole's at 5,000. Obviously, he becomes an awesome guy to have a look at. Oh, what a bad sentence. Norris Cole and awesome in the same sentence. He becomes an intriguing guy to look at if Tyreek is out. He's been averaging almost 30 points across the last three. He feels like he's almost a must-play sort of guy if Tyreek is out, so you'd have to look at him. And 6,800 for Jrue Holiday doesn't get better as a matchup for point guards. He dropped 33 today. You feel like that there's, you know, 40, 45 point upside in Jrue Holiday. He can go massive. He has had a 55 point game in those last five outings, and he is averaging over 35 in the last five games. He is worth a look, as is Anthony Davis. He's still only 10,100. That feels cheap. He dropped 58 today. He's averaging 49 across the last three. You're playing the Lakers. You think that 50 points for Anthony Davis is definitely within play here. On the Lakers side of things, I don't mind Julius Randle. He's been almost a lock for 30 points every night. At 6,200, if he gets you another 30, I think you're relatively happy with that. His five-game min-max goes from 24 to 37, so a little bit of a range there. But even at 24, that's still, you know, over 4x value at his salary, or it's 4x value. So it's not, you know, a complete write-off. Now, Brandon Bass at 3,800 maybe is worth a look. Maybe, but he really hasn't been producing too much of late. But you know, going against the Pelicans front court, people can start to go off. The Pelicans were a sieve on defense at the guard spots earlier in the season. That has turned around, so that is not something that is the case anymore. They are really reducing opposition point guards. D'Angelo Russell is at 4,800. Don't mind him, but don't love him either. And Jordan Clarkson at 55, definitely don't have any interest in using him. And Lou Williams is at 58. That just feels a little bit too expensive for me. He did drop 28 in the last game, but again, the Pelicans have been reducing guard play pretty well. Ryan Anderson's at 6,200. Yes, he has the Lakers bump, but he has been really inconsistent. I'll reserve him for cash games only, and he's much better when Davis doesn't play. Whereas Kobe Bryant has been just destroying teams recently. He had dropped to 54 in the last game. He's averaging 38.6 across the last three. He's still priced at 6,300, though, so you have to have faith that Kobe's going to go for 30. I don't, so that makes him a tournament option, but definitely not someone that I'm having too much faith in cash. If Tyreek is out, Bryce Dejon Jones, a really great matchup for him. His minimum salary, he should get 25 to 30 minutes, maybe even more. He'd definitely be someone I'm throwing into a lineup. And Anthony Douglas fits a similar boat. He hasn't been getting anywhere near the minutes that Dejon Jones. I keep changing my pronunciation. Dejon Jones has been getting. So Douglas, a rung below, if I'm spending 3,500 minimum salary on a shooting guard, point guard, it's going to be Dejon Jones, not Tony Douglas. If Kobe happens to be out, Anthony Brown will take his role, but he barely registers on the fantasy radar. Toronto and Portland. The Blazers are favored by one. The total is 204. James Johnson has been ruled out for the Raptors, and Noah Vonleh is doubtful for the Portland Trail Blazers. We would think that Myers Leonard would start if With Vonleh's out and with James Johnson out, I'm going to assume that Norman Powell gets the start, but most of the minutes go to Corey Joseph and Terrence Ross. Myers Leonard at 4,000, if he gets a start and can play 30 minutes, he's definitely worth a punt against Portland, who have been a little bit better recently, against Toronto, sorry. And they've been pretty decent against big men recently, the Raptors, especially with Bismack Biyombo getting a little bit of extra time because Jonas Valanciunas is dealing with a thumb issue. Leonard is worth a punt at 4,000. Ed Davis is at 4,100. The situation with Vonleh out might lead to some extra Ed Davis minutes. I'm not overly keen on it. Our projections do like him. He's an okay GPP option, but I'm not all that keen. I'm definitely not keen on him in cash game situations. Patrick Patterson at 3,600 is, he's in a really nice spot here. Really good ease ranking for him going up against the Raptors. Really good salary. I can't do it in a cash game though. So Patrick Patterson remains as a tournament option only. Bismack Biyombo is worth considering as well. He's at 4,000. He's averaging 22.7 across the last three, put 24 up in the last one, getting some nice rebound and block numbers while Valanciunas' minutes are limited with his thumb problem. He is a tournament option at 4,000. Corey Joseph at 3,900, another tournament play with the extra run he'll likely see. Same with Terrence Ross, who put up 23 in the last game, and he's priced at 4,300. He has got more scope to go big than what Joseph does, but he probably feels a little bit less consistent. As for the point guards, two high-priced point guards here, Damian Lillard's at 87, Kyle Lowry's at 86. I would probably take Lillard in this one at 87. He's been producing a lot better recently, a higher five-game average, a higher three-game average. He's actually got a higher floor over the last five, which has been a real issue with Lillard this season. But recently, his lowest score in his last five is 35. I would be happy, or I'd be okay using both, but if I'm gonna pick one of those two guys, it's probably Lillard. CJ McCollum's at 7,600. His form has been returning to that early season form. Some nice numbers recently. You feel like you can get a 32 or 33.9 from him on most outings. Gerald Henderson is at minimum salary, or no, not minimum, under 4,000, 3,900. He dropped 27 in the last game. He's averaging over 20 in the last five games. The matchup's not ideal for him, but he's getting a consistent 22 to 23 minutes, and he's not a terrible guy to have a look at. Even in a cash game, if you want to throw some other high price guys, which is not a huge amount of them, but you probably want to get guys like Anthony Davis and James Harden, who we're going to talk about next, into your lineup, Gerald Henderson might be that sort of cheap buffer that you can throw in there. Mason Plumlee's minutes have been really depressed lately. He's at 5,700. I wouldn't spend up on him, nor would I spend up on Jonas Valanciunas at 6,300. DeMar DeRozan's at 81. A little bit down recently. At 81, he needs to go for close to 40. Not sure that that's the right area. Now, the matchup against CJ McCollum looks pretty positive for him, so I could see him doing it, but nothing's really pointing me towards going, yeah, I've got to have DeMar DeRozan into a lineup. The last game of the night, the Houston Rockets and the Phoenix Suns. Terrence Jones, I'm sure you'll all be shocked to know that Terrence Jones is out with another weird situation. He was involved in a car accident. He's not hurt, but he's shaken up, so he's not going to play. This guy has the weirdest injuries. Not even injury, just in a car accident, not playing, not hurt. Just really a weird situation for Terrence Jones. Anyway, he is ruled out. Montrezl Harrell is ruled out. Clint Capela is questionable. So there's going to be some minutes in that front court. Josh Smith's at 4,200. He put up 28 in only 21 minutes in the last game. So that makes it worth looking at Josh Smith as a punt option at 4,200. He definitely has some upside there, especially if Capela gets ruled out. Other Houston guys to pay attention to, Jim Harden. He's at 11,000. This matchup is beautiful for him. It's an expensive price, yes, but Harden is averaging 60 points over the last three games. Averaging 60. And now he takes on the Phoenix Suns backcourt. I would feel comfortable with thinking that 60 is a number that's quite comfortably achievable for Harden in this one. If you throw some of these other cheap options in there, getting him at 11,000 looks like a great play. Not many other Houston guys are really massively appealing. 5,900 for Trevor Ariza feels a little expensive. Dwight Howard at 7,800, I don't mind. He's going to be back, but he hasn't played 30 minutes in a while. He's got the ability to go pretty big. I don't think many people will go with Dwight, but at 7,800, he definitely is he's an intriguing guy to have a look at. For the Phoenix Suns, Markieff Morris at 5,200. So many words coming out about him from the team. At 5,200, he's already averaging 28 over the last five, and that's with only one game with this new coach who apparently loves him. He dropped 54 in the last one, almost have to use Markeith Morris, it feels like. Archie Goodwin at 51, he's up and down, makes him a hard cash game play, but a really nice tournament option because he dropped a 36 in the last one. And PJ Tucker at 48, he's a solid cash game play. He's a 23 to 27 sort of point guy. Just going to be in that range most of the time. He's going to get decent minutes. I really like Patrick Beverley, and I like Devin Booker, obviously, as well. 5,400 for Booker. He feels like he's going to be 30 points, around that 30-point mark on most nights. He's a nice cash and tournament option. He's min-max over the last five, 24 and 33, so a pretty solid range there for Devin Booker. The center position for Phoenix, Alex Len and Tyson Chandler, up in the air. You can throw them into a tournament because they've both got great matchups. The Rockets bump, but we don't know how the minutes are going to go down. If I'm betting one way, it's probably Chandler because he'll likely start and he could get 30 minutes, but I don't have very much confidence in that being the case. The other name I want to throw out there is Marcus Thornton. In the last game when the Rockets were without Capella and Howard, Thornton played 23 minutes and dropped 30 points. Earlier in the season when Jones was out and Howard was dealing with issues and Smith wasn't there, he was having massive, massive runs. He's priced at 3,800. Not really keen in a cash game. But if I'm looking in a tournament, they might go real small. He might get 25 minutes and he might put up a big, big night. So Marcus Thornton's a name that I'm not sure many people will be on. But if you look at him in a tournament, I reckon he's got potential to go for 30, 35 points, which at 3,800 is massive. That's 10x value, which can really give you a kickstart in your tournament lineup. All right, that is all of that. Let's look at the DFS perfect lineup. Then I'll answer some listener questions and then we'll be done. Not perfect lineup. I hope it's the perfect lineup. These are my picks of the day. Patrick Beverley at 4,800 for the point guards. Archie Goodwin, 51. And Dame Lillard at 87. At shooting guard, Marcus Thornton, 38 as that punt option. Devin Booker at 54. And Jim Harden at 11,000. At small forward, Stan Johnson at 4,000. Marcus Morris at 51. And I don't like the high price small forwards. There's only one, and it's Mallow, and I don't like him at 89. At power forward, Josh Smith, 42. Markeith Morris, 52. And Tony Davis at 10,100. And the centers, Myers Leonard, 4,000, Robin Lopez, 52, and Andre Drummond, 8,700. Now, let's go in and answer a couple of these questions that you guys have sent through. The first one comes from Gobert in Cantazenis. Cool. He's on Twitter, at WAC35Wall. Do you think the Suns' last game will be the norm for their rotation? Adding in Knight's return, of course, loses Goodwin. Yeah, I think it will. The only thing that is going to be an issue is what they do at the center position because both Len and Chandler were dealing with some foul trouble and that limited their minutes. We need to see what happens with that with the rest of it. Otherwise, Booker, Tucker are going to play that similar role. Morris, I think, is going to be a key. He's going to play a big role, at least until the trade deadline. But for now, yes, I think this is exactly what they're going to be doing. What other questions do we have here? Savage, who's on Twitter, at the end is near. Rest of career, Terrence Jones or Will Barton? That's a... You know how people say it's like making me choose between my two favorite children? This is like making me choose between my two least favorite children. Rest of career. I don't have a huge amount of confidence in Terrence Jones. I don't think he's good. I also don't think Will Barton's good. So Savage, you're really putting it to me here. I'll say Barton. I say Barton's trending up, Jones is trending down. Yeah, we'll leave it that way. RaddyKelp10, who's on Twitter, at xorad10. Which teams do you see Markeith's value will increase if he was traded? Well, not many, to be honest, because I think he's got a great role at the moment. So not many teams will increase his role. Toronto would be one of them. I think that he would fit well there. Washington, he would fit brilliantly well. And it's more like maintaining the status quo of his value. Houston, I think he'd work pretty well down in Houston. They're probably the three teams where I look at him and go, yeah, he'll be the Clippers. Don't really see how that works out, but with Blake Griffin out, he'd be great there. They'd be able to maintain this value that he's got currently with the Suns. I'm trying to think, Portland, he'd be an improvement over Noah Vonleh, but I'm not really sure they get that done. The Raptors and the Wizards are the two that really stand out to me. David Tong, who's on Twitter, at David F. Tong. He says, the top five stashes ahead of the trade deadline. Who's this year's Reggie Jackson? Well, it's not going to be this year's Reggie Jackson, I don't think. Morris is probably going to be the guy, but even if he doesn't get traded, he's still going to maintain pretty good value. I don't think there's going to be as much activity on this trade deadline. So many you would have heard on plenty of other shows and podcasts that with the salary cap going up, the incentive for teams to trade is not as high. And with the standings, especially in the East, squashed together so much, teams are all going to be thinking, we've got a chance at the playoffs. They're not going to be sellers and buyers. Everyone's going to be buyers with not much sellers. I don't think that there's going to be many players who really benefit there. The two guys that I've got stashed is Morris, but said even if he doesn't get traded, he's still playing well. And Dennis Schröder is the other one. And Zach LaVine is playing as he should in his own merit. Now, Kevin Martin might get traded, but really, LaVine has that value anyway. I don't think there are many guys who classify as this guy's going to get traded. There's just not much chatter for players going around. We hear talk of Al Horford maybe getting moved, Dwight Howard maybe getting moved, but none of this changes anything for their value. The guys are Morris and Schröder, and Schröder, if he doesn't get traded by the deadline, then you move on from him. Morris is a guy that you hold on to, I think. Nathan, this is the question I mentioned before. Hernandez, Nathan, 6. Is it time to drop Fournier in a 12 team? Would you consider Skiles' new boyfriend, Super Mario? Well, I covered that already. I'd consider it, but I'm not sure that I do, unless I'm just really banking on Hezonja's upside being the guy. Heath Moss asked a question, which I'm not going to cover today, but I'm going to cover it soon. It's maybe too early, but what young players should we aim to get on our rosters for keeper and roto leagues for the 16-17 season? That's something I will be covering over the All-Star break. Lorem Ipsum, who's on Twitter at NoFurnersForever. I'm sure that's wrong. Trade away Reggie Jackson and Nikola Jokic for Klay Thompson. Hashtag punting assists. Well, if you're punting assists, Reggie Jackson's value drops completely. So, yeah, I'm okay with that. Look, it obviously depends how deep is your league and who are you going to be able to add in that extra roster spot that you've created by trading away a 2-for-1. But getting Klay and getting that elite scoring, nice block numbers, good percentages, big threes, if that fits what you need to do and you're punting assists, then Jackson's value is not right there. And I'm okay with that. You could definitely have some, that could definitely be a good move for you. There was a question that came in via Facebook, and I want to bring it up, so I forgot to bring it up earlier. And it was something that I think is worthy of more discussion at another time, but I'm going to touch on it briefly here. Where are we? All right. It comes from Ray Cheek. Actually, ask this one, do this one first on Twitter, on Facebook, at Greg Tetro. More value the rest of the season, Lord Alfred Payton or D'Angelo Russell? I would say Payton because I do not trust Byron Scott to be able to give Russell the minutes that he needs. So I would say Payton, assuming that he fits what you need to do. The scoring's not going to be there. It's going to be heavy assists, steals, and rebounds, where Russell's going to be three-pointers with some assists and scoring. It really depends on what you need, but I'd give the edge slightly to Alfred. Now, Ray Cheek says, with daily fantasy getting so big and there being people that actually play for a living, do you think that something should be done about situations like tonight where Jimmy Butler cost people serious money? I mean, if they have a game time decision tag, then that's on the player, but it's not a mention. It's devastating to some. And I don't think that the team's really... Yes, it was weird. We heard nothing about Jimmy Butler's knee, and then all of a sudden he wasn't playing. A bit weird. I don't think that... Well, maybe I do, because... The NBA injury reporting needs to be improved. There's no time for roster lock. There's nothing like that. It needs to be done like the NFL's done with the advent of sports gambling, hopefully becoming legal, and the rise of DFS. This stuff is becoming more important. So I do think that it's something that the NBA needs to look into with a, here is a active roster lock. These guys are in or they're out, or a starting lineup, or whatever it is, or some sort of injury declaration time frame, not 1 minute before. Oh, by the way, not playing, and you know, when we'd heard nothing of it at all. There's always ways for the teams to get around it, but that sort of transparent injury reporting is done in the NFL, and I think it's something that could be done in the NBA. So yeah, Ray, I understand where you're coming from. The teams aren't going to care that people necessarily lost money in daily fantasy, but with daily fantasy being sponsored on these things, and just the overall impression, people want more stable information, and the more people that play daily fantasy and gamble on the sports, the more people who watch these things and pay attention to games that they might not necessarily do otherwise. So it is a good point, Ray. All right, we are done for today's podcast, guys. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Basketball Monster is at Bask Monster. You can follow them along and or follow me along on that and get all the up-to-date breaking news on lineups and injuries and all that sort of stuff. Okay, the Emma Sizzle 500, or no, Emma Sizzle was the 500th iTunes review. Contact me, please. And also Ron120932, we can organize your prizes. Check out the Facebook contest and the Instagram contest, which will go up before games tomorrow. I think we're done. We are. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.